Okay.
He paused, and I knew what he was waiting for me to say, but I wasn't going to say it on the phone. Especially not when I would have to yell it, and I wasn't even sure if he would remember it. Good night, I said. He went quiet, and I looked at the phone briefly before bringing it back to my ear. Elle?
Night, Mace.
The line clicked dead. I don't think I could have described a single thing about the party after that phone call. After a hug and a dance with my dad, I paced around the hall outside the event room for about a half hour. I hated not being with Elliot for that conversation. I hated that we'd crossed this enormous line, that we'd acknowledged a future for us, outside the closet in the real world, with a real relationship, and he'd been miles and miles away from me, and drunk. I hated how he'd sounded when he said goodnight.
Macy, why are you out here?
Dad asked. His shoes clicked on the marble as he made his way to me, and the roar of the party felt like cold water spilling across my skin.
You want to leave?
I looked up at him, nodded, and burst into tears.
I don't understand the problem,
Dad said, maneuvering into a sharp turn. I eyed him to make sure he was really sober. I hadn't seen him drinking, but he seemed about as mentally collected as I felt.
You had a good conversation with Elliot and you're upset about it?
I just don't like how the call ended, I admitted. I felt like he really wanted me there.
I realize you're home more than you're up there, but that's how you two have always done it. What's the stress?
Dad asked, always logical. To be fair, he didn't have all the details. I didn't tell him that Elliot said he loved me. I certainly didn't tell him that Elliot had proposed. It just felt weird. Unlike Elliot, my dad rarely pressed. After 20 minutes of silence, Dad pulled into our driveway and slowly shut off the car. Turning to me, he said quietly,
"Help me understand."
"He's my best friend," I began, feeling the tightening of tears in my throat. "I think we're both nervous about what happens when we figure out what we're doing for college and what we do after this, after our lives aren't just punctuated by weekend trips. It felt bad tonight, the way the call ended, and I don't know what I'd do if something bad happened between us." I sat, staring at the dashboard and the quietly ticking car. "Sometimes I wonder if we should just be friends so that I don't have to worry about ever losing him." Dad pursed his lips, thinking.
"So he's your Lais."
My eyes filled with tears again at the sound of my mother's name. I hadn't heard him say it in years.
"You're both young, but if he is that person for you,"
Dad continued,
"you won't be able to just be friends. You'll want to give him everything, to show him every way you love him."
Tears spilled, running down my cheeks.
"I'd take any amount of time with her,"
he whispered, turning to look at me.
"I would have taken anything I could get. I don't regret one moment of loving her, even though it still hurts that she's gone."
I nodded, throat tight. I already feel like I'm wasting so much time away from him.
"It won't always be that way."
"Can I drive up tonight?" I asked him. He stared at me for a long, quiet beat.
"You're serious?"
"Yeah." Closing his eyes, he took a few deep breaths.
"You'll be careful."
Relief flooded my limbs. "I promise." Dad looked forward out the windshield at our driveway, to his old car parked just beside this new one.
"I filled up the Volvo this morning. You can take it."
I leaned over the console, wrapping my arms around him.
"You'll call me as soon as you get there."
Nodding into his neck, I promised. Now, Sunday, December 31st. Elliot comes to a stop in a tight thicket of olive trees, turning to stare at me. This far out, the sound of crickets is deafening. The wedding party is a distant buzz. I imagine we walked half a mile away, down a wide path that went from manicured to dusty, to farmland. Jesus Christ, where do we start? I want to start with touching. He might want to start with words and explanations and apologies, mine and his. There's still so much I need to tell him. His chest rises and falls with the force of his breath, and my own lungs seem to be flapping around inside me, struggling to pull in air. I expect him to say something, but instead he just falls to his knees in front of me, wrapping his arms around my hips and pressing his face to my stomach. Frozen for a moment, I stare down at the top of his head, trying to translate the shaking of his shoulders. He's crying. "No, no," I whisper. My hands go into his hair, tilting his face to me, and I lower myself, push him back against a tree, crawl down to him, over him until his face is right up against mine, so close he's blurry, so close he's the only thing I can see. I slide his glasses up over his forehead and off his face, placing them carefully in the grass nearby.
"What are we doing?"
he whispers. "I missed you." I bend, kissing his neck, his jaw. He pulls me back by my shoulders, and I watch two heavy tears roll over his cheekbone.
"I thought I would never touch you again."
"I thought that too." He bites his lower lip, eyes wide.
"I'll take anything you give me. Is that pathetic?"
I lean in, lips touching his, inhaling the clean smell of his aftershave, the sharp scent of grass, needing oxygen to stay conscious for all of this. His mouth opens against mine, and he sits up with a sharp inhale, hands cupping my jaw again. Urgently, he comes back for more, tilting his head, biting and sucking, and I need deeper, more. I need all of him. His moans are muted by my lips and teeth and breath. His hands come up beneath my dress, pushing it to my waist while I tug his bow tie loose, unbuttoning his shirt. Cold fingers slide up the inside of my thigh. His chest is so warm under my hands, though, and I dig in, sliding my palms over his collarbone and down to his stomach, wanting to feel every inch. He grunts out some unintelligible words when he feels me through my underwear, and then his fingers slide up my navel, carefully digging down inside the lace, and I push up to my knees above him, helping give him access to the place I need his touch more than I need anything else in the galaxy.
"Are you wet like this for me?"
he asks, pulling back to look up at my face. His fingers push into me, thumb stroking.
"This is me."
I nod, and his disbelief is contagious. It's what makes every touch feel amplified, makes me move with him, biting him while he touches me. It's what sends my body up a tight spiral staircase, one destination, just there, just two strokes higher, two more. "El."
"Yeah?"
"I'm going to come." His smile curves the single word.
"Good."
I fumble for him, his belt, his zipper. "Wait," I tell my body. "Oh God, I'm close. Wait. Hold on. Wait." He doesn't stop what he's doing when he pulls back and looks up at my face.
"You want?"
His fingertips glide over me, tighter, faster. Clumsily, I dig in, finding the heavy heat of him, closing my hand around it, shifting so I'm there, tilting him up, making him wet with me. He groans as he sinks in, and the sound hits me somewhere ancient and savage. The relief of it, of him thick and hungry, finally sliding deep in and out of me, is a melting star, spreading fire into my bloodstream. He gasps that he doesn't want to come, never wants to come, doesn't ever want to stop. I'm already on the sharp edge, and our instant frantic fucking gets me there through a jagged set of thrusts. Him up, me over. The crickets and Elliot go quiet at the sharp aching cries tearing out of me. In the silence that follows, I can feel the drum of his pulse where his lips meet my throat, but then his hands come to my jaw, cupping, tilting my face to his.
"Yeah,"
he whispers. I nod in his hands, feeling the weight of him inside me.
"Holy Mother of God,"
he says into a kiss.
"This is unreal."
Everything narrows down to the tiny shifts of my hips over his and the soft sucking kisses. I'm barely moving, just rocking, squeezing. It means I'm not expecting the tight way he tells me he's close. I press the question against his lips. Do you want me to stop?
Only if you're not on something.
His tongue meets mine and he groans.
Macy, honey, I'm so close.
I'm not sure why it's this moment that makes the reality sink in that we're making love, still mostly dressed, somewhere in the gardens at his brother's wedding. But when Elliot comes, I want his hands and the cool, humid air on my skin, not on the crushed silk of my dress. Every time we've touched each other, we've been mostly dressed. I reach back, unzipping, pushing the straps off my shoulders and quickly doing away with the tiny strapless bra. My dress falls to my waist. His mouth is there, and his words of approval for the heat and sweetness of me, for the feel of my breasts on his tongue. Against my belly is the scratch of his open starched shirt, and inside I feel him climb, feel him need more than the gentle shifting he's getting, and his hands find my breasts, holding them for his open mouth. We are a crescendo again. Faster now, I'm bouncing on him 3, 4, 5, 6 times.
Fuck.
He bites me. Wild.
Yes.
Elliot stills me when his iron grip drops to my hips and he's jerking into me, his mouth open, teeth bared on my breast. It will leave a mark. But even after he's finished, he grazes his teeth back and forth, tongue stroking the tight peak, soothing the sight of his gentle attack. I feel the way he spasms still. His breaths are tight puffs of air against my breast. My fingers make a tangle in his hair, holding him to me. Goosebumps spread across my skin as his hands slide around, cupping my backside, holding me tight against him. He came inside me. He's still inside me. What did we just do? And how have I gone this long without him? Making love to him suddenly feels vital, like air and water and warmth. He turns his face up to mine expectantly, and it's only a tiny shift forward from my mouth to meet his in this new, lazy relief. It's both familiar and foreign. His skin is coarser with stubble, his lips stronger. Inside me, I know he's thicker. I start to move off him, worried about making a mess of his tuxedo, but he holds me steady, his hips to mine.
Not yet,
he says against my mouth.
I want to stay here. I still don't believe this is happening.
Me either. I am lost in the lazy sweep of his tongue, the tiny kisses that melt into deeper ones.
I might want to do it again.
I smile. Me too. He moves his mouth to my neck, his left hand coming up to cup my breast. Is it weird, I begin, that I felt like I was having sex with someone new and old at the same time? This makes him laugh, and he bends, kissing my chest. Leaning back, he whispers,
"Wanna know something even weirder?"
My eyes fall closed. I wanna know everything. And for the first time in over a decade, I really do.
It was years before I was with someone other than you. You were the only woman I was with until I was, well, for a long time.
His words hit the blank wall of my sex haze, and then dread falls over me like blackness.
I've loved you my whole life,
Elliot continues, his lips moving against my collarbone. Slowly, I open my eyes, and he looks up at me.
At least from the minute I ever thought about love and sex and women.
He's still inside me. He smiles, and the moonlight catches the sharp angle of his jaw.
I've never wanted anyone the way I want you. It took a long time before I wanted anyone else physically at all.
It's a little like being in the eye of a tornado. All around me, things are happening, but inside my head, it's so quiet. At my silence, his eyes widen first and then fall closed.
Oh my God. I just realized what I've said.
Then. Monday, January 1st, 11 years ago. Just off the Richmond Bridge, I called Elliot, listening through the speaker as the phone rang and rang, eventually going to voicemail. About 10 minutes into my drive, it had occurred to me that I didn't know where in town Christian lived, and I didn't know how long Elliot would be there. It was after 1 in the morning now. He might even just be home in bed, and I wouldn't be able to get to him without waking up the rest of the house. Highway 101 stretched out dark ahead of me, dotted with the occasional burning taillights of another car. It was otherwise empty, with clumps of drivers getting on and off the freeway around the dotted small towns. Novato, Petaluma, Rohnert Park. In Santa Rosa, I tried calling again, and this time an unfamiliar male voice answered.
Elliot's phone.
Noise blared, drunken and raucous in the background. A sour combination of relief and irritation twisted in me. It was nearly 2 in the morning and he, or at least his phone, was still at the party? Is Elliot around? I asked.
Who's calling?
I paused. Who's answering? The guy inhaled, and his answer came out tight, like he had just taken a giant hit off something.
Christian.
Christian, I said. This is Macy. He let out a long, controlled breath.
Elliot's Macy?
Someone in the background let out a sharp,
dude.
Yes, I confirmed. His girlfriend, Macy.
Oh, shit.
The line went quiet, muffled, as if someone was holding a hand there. When he came back, he said simply,
Elliot's not here.
Did he go home without his phone? I asked.
Nah.
Confused, I pressed, so how is he not there if you know he didn't go home?
Macy.
A slow, drunken laugh, and then,
I am way too high to follow that.
Okay, I said calmly. Can you just give me your address? He rattled off an address on Rosewood Drive, adding,
Second house on the left. You'll hear it.
Chris, someone protested in the background.
Don't.
Christian let out another low laugh.
What the fuck do I care?
And then he hung up. Christian's house was new, and therefore large for the craftsman Modest Healdsburg, set on a hill and overlooking a vineyard. He was right. I could hear it as soon as I turned onto his street. Cars jammed the long driveway, fanning out messily toward the curb. I parked on the first empty stretch of street, several houses down. Zipping my puffy jacket over my dress, I left my heels in the car, grabbed some flip-flops from the trunk, and trudged back up the hill. It seemed silly to even bother knocking. The door was slightly ajar, noise pouring out, so I just pushed inside. Stepping over a wide pile of shoes that seemed paradoxically thoughtful given the state of the rest of the house. There were cans, bottles, and stubbed-out joints on nearly every flat surface. Blaring music and television battled from down the hall. On the living room couch, two guys were passed out, and a third sat with a game controller in his hand, playing Call of Duty. "Have you seen Elliot?" I asked, yelling above the hammering of fictional gunfire. The guy looked up, glanced over to the kitchen, and then shrugged. I headed to the kitchen. The room was huge and a complete disaster. Blender drinks had been attempted and abandoned. A pyramid of beer cans sat on a sturdy marble island, surrounded by a wreath of broken chips, smears of salsa, a trail of M&Ms. The sink was full of smudged glassware and a tall bong.
"He's upstairs,"
someone said behind me. I turned and recognized Christian from the photos on Elliot's desk. He was tall, not as tall as Elliot, but wider, with an ill-advised goatee and a beer stain on his Chico State Wildcats t-shirt. His eyes were bloodshot and dilated nearly to black. At his side, another guy stared wide-eyed at me, looking like he was going to be sick. It was Brandon. Elliot's two best friends. Upstairs? I repeated. Christian lifted his chin in a nod, rolling a toothpick from one side of his mouth to the other.
He's really wasted,
Brandon said, following me when I turned to head out of the kitchen and upstairs. His voice grew increasingly desperate as my foot hit the first step.
Macy, I wouldn't. I think he's been sick.
Then I'll take him home. Even to me, my voice sounded hollow, tinny, like it was being projected from speakers in the faraway corners of the vaulted staircase.
We'll bring him home.
Brandon wrapped a gentle hand around my elbow.
Let him sleep it off.
My pulse beat in my throat, in my temples. I wasn't sure what I would find, but no, that isn't quite right. I think I knew. I understood Christian's laconic smirk and Brandon's buzzing anxiety. Looking back, it's hard to know whether I was prescient to head up there, or whether it was just so obvious.
I would just head home, Macy, Brandon pleaded. When he wakes up, I'll have him call you.
His voice continued as a hum in the background, following me all the way up the stairs and to the only closed door at the very end of the hall. I pushed inside and stopped. A long leg hung over the side of the unmade bed. Elliot's shoes were still on, still tied, but his jeans and boxers were at his knees, and his shirt was shoved up under his armpits, exposing the lines of his chest, the dark trail of hair on his navel. Brandon was right. Elliot was passed out. But so was Emma, lying naked across his torso. I took a step back, right into Brandon's chest. Oh my God, I whispered. I'd known heartbreak before, but this was a different sensation, like a lit match held to the bloody organ inside, holding steady, waiting patiently for it to dry out, harden into coal, catch fire.
I love you so fucking much. I love you and I lust you and want you. I love you as the person I want to be with forever. Will you marry me?
Oh my God.
Macy, it really isn't what you think,
Brandon said, cupping his hands on my shoulders.
Please trust me.
It looks like he had sex with her, I said numbly, shrugging him off. As much as the scene horrified me, I couldn't look away. Emma's mouth was open on his chest as she snored. Elliot's dick hung limp along his thigh. I'd never really seen him naked before. Never just looked. Brandon shifted anxiously.
It's her, Macy. Elliot wouldn't... Oh, shit.
Christian said, coming up beside me.
Not a good look, Elle.
I made some gasping, choking sound that he seemed to interpret as a question.
Nah, they have a history. Just let it go,
Christian said, and then held in a rumbling belch and punched his chest with his fist.
It's not really a thing. They just fuck around sometimes.
I turned, bursting past them down the hall, my feet fumbling down the stairs, through the kitchen, and then out the front door, to the cold, stark air where I couldn't seem to breathe. I tried to pull in a breath, but it was like I'd been punched over and over in the diaphragm. 2:30 in the morning on New Year's, and I was the most sober but least safe driver on the road. Through a wall of tears, I navigated clumsily down the winding road, zigzagging up the narrow hill and down the gravelly slope of the driveway. I screamed at the windshield and nearly turned around a handful of times because I almost couldn't believe my own memory, the two of them lying there. I didn't look at Elliot's house as I vaulted up the front steps, afraid I would pound on the door, demand that he come downstairs even though I knew he wasn't there. I didn't know much in that moment, but I knew I couldn't make it back to Berkeley in one piece. Inside, the house was ice cold. Wood was neatly stacked in the back pallet. I could make a fire, have something to eat to settle the grinding in my gut, but I could barely make it to the couch. I pulled a blanket from the back of the easy chair and curled up on the floor. Honestly, I don't remember anything else but the feel of the cold floor along the right side of my body. I think my brain must have shut down immediately. Some self-preservation instinct didn't want me to see his naked hips anymore. See the familiar press of her hand to his navel. Some protective piece of my mind didn't want to recall the thick smell of that room, the cloud of bodies and sweat and beer and sex, or the casual way Christian referenced their intimate history. But was he right? Had that been what it was like all week long and for most of their lives? Emma and Elliot casually hooking up, filling the tedium of their days with each other? Texting each other to hang when there was nothing else to do. Hooking up at the park because why not? I had no doubt that Elliot loved me. I knew he did, felt it in the marrow of my bones. But I was there barely a third of the time, and the other two-thirds, there was Emma. Every day at school, all year long, accessible, convenient, familiar. I had no idea who real-life Elliot was. My Elliot existed only on certain days, only in the confines of our library closet. I don't know him at all. I don't know him at all. That was the horrible thought that threaded through my dreams. Dreams of running into him on a bus and not recognizing him. Dreams of passing him in the hall and feeling the uncomfortable echo that I'd somehow missed something important, but didn't know what it was. Now, Sunday, December 31st. I shift my hips up, feeling the clench in my chest when Elliot's body slips from mine. I feel him retreat beneath me, his eyes filled with an ache that seems to build the longer we're silent.
"You never let me explain what happened," he says.
I can't meet his eyes. It goes so much deeper than this. But even though these details seem tiny now, I know it's where we have to start. "You said you loved me that night," I remind him, "for the first time." He nods eagerly.
"I know."
"You asked me to marry you." Elliot reaches for my arm, circling his fingers around my wrist.
"I meant it. I had a ring."
I look at him in shock. "If I'd said yes, would you still have fucked Emma?"
"Okay."
He stands, pulling his pants up, buckling his belt.
"Okay."
His shirt hangs loose, hair remains a mess from my fingers. Elliot looks down at me, backlit by the moon and the distant glow of the party. Bending to retrieve his glasses, he slides them on.
"Do you know how many times I've told you this story in my head?"
"Probably about as many times as I've tried to pretend I didn't see what I saw." He crouches.
"I didn't know what happened until a few days later."
"What?"
"I mentioned to Christian that you hadn't called me back, and he said probably because she saw Emma naked on top of you."
I blink away. I still see the image so clearly.
"And the worst bit of that,"
he says quietly,
"is that until he said it, I didn't know I'd been with Emma. She wasn't there in the morning."
I need to digest this for 2, 3, 4 breaths. "You woke up with your pants at your knees, Elle. That didn't clue you in?"
"This is the part I can't figure out,"
he whispers.
"In my head, it was you. In my head, you came up to the party. You found me passed out on Chris's bed. In my head, you went down on me, climbed on top of me. I don't remember having sex with Emma that night. I remember having sex with you."
"Can you hear yourself?" I stare at him, mouth agape. Inside my ribcage, my heart is a barreling thunder at the words "went down on me." I never went down on him, but she did. "Do you hear the bullshit meter screaming in the background? You're telling me that the night you had sex with Emma, you thought it was me?" Elliot groans, raking a hand through his hair.
"I realize how insane it sounds. Even at the time, I couldn't piece the night together, and I've had 11 years to try to make sense of it. I was so drunk, Mace. I remember waking up to the feel of your mouth on me. I remember touching your hair, talking to you, encouraging, and when I look back, I still see your face when she climbed on me.
He shakes his head, squeezing his eyes closed, and when he says this, I remember what Brandon started to say, something about how Elliot wouldn't.
I woke up, he continued, and had a moment of blistering embarrassment because Chris's bedroom door was open, and a few people were walking around cleaning shit up. I was all alone with my dick hanging out. I texted you asking where you'd gone. 2 days I went along with things, thinking I had drunk sex with my girlfriend at a party. I thought you were embarrassed or angry at me for being so wasted, and that's why you hadn't called.
Is this his truth? Some quiet, heartbreaking mistake? Part of me aches for this version of things, wanting to believe it so badly that it makes my teeth clench. The other part of me wants to scream that this tiny whimper of a drunken misunderstanding unraveled everything. It should have been something intentional, something enormous, something worthy of what came after.
If you'd have let me explain,
he says quietly, looking at me in bewilderment.
I called you over and over.
I know you did. I was aware that Elliot called several times a day for months. I never checked my old email account afterward, but if I had, there would probably be scores of unread messages there, too. I knew his regret was enormous, but that wasn't ever the problem.
I fucked up, he says. But Macy, even as bad as that is, and I know it was bad, was it really worth this?
He gestures between us.
Was it really enough to make you just drop me? After everything, to not talk to me ever again?
I stare at him, plucking words from the masses and arranging and rearranging them into sentences. The Emma thing feels so small now. It was just the first domino. We had this deep, unbreakable trust, you know? And you broke that. You did. But it's not just that. It's me. It's been me, too.
You don't think I deserved the chance to explain?
He asks, misunderstanding my incoherence, restrained emotion making his voice tight. I can tell he's waiting for an answer. And the answer is yes, of course he deserved a chance to explain. Of course he did. In an alternate reality, he would have called me later that day and I would have answered.
I loved you,
he says.
I have always loved you. There was never anyone but you for me. You knew that.
I fumble through my words. It was a bad night.
I know it was bad, Mace.
His voice is growing harder, nearly disbelieving.
We were each other's first love, first sex, first everything. But come on, that's a knockdown, drag-out fight. That isn't disappearing for a decade.
It wasn't just that. My heart and mouth seem to agree that we cannot, in fact, do this right now. Metal screeches against asphalt in my ears. I close my eyes, shaking my head to clear it.
Do you have any idea what it's been like?
He asks, getting more frustrated now in the face of my inarticulate fluster.
Every day I woke up and wondered if that would be the day I'd see you again. And if I did, how would it go? I missed you so much. I'm 29 and I've never loved another woman.
He stares at me, unblinking.
And every woman I've been with knows it, unfortunately for them.
I open my mouth to speak, but nothing comes out. He stares at me, bewildered.
You want to know what Rachel meant about how fucked up I was? Well, here's one example. The first person to go down on me after you left had to sit there while I broke down like a fucking maniac, he says, trying to explain why I didn't want her to give me head.
I'm sorry. I cover my face, breathing in, breathing out. Item 27 on Mom's list was to remind me to breathe. In and out 10 times when I'm stressed. 1, 2.
I'm sorry, too. I want this,
he whispers.
I want you.
3. I want you, too, I think, but I don't even know how to tell you that Emma is the least of it. Another woman giving you head is the least of it.
Talk to me, Mace, he urges. Please.
4, 5.
I want you,
he repeats, and his voice carries a strange distance.
But I'm realizing now that maybe I shouldn't.
6, 7. By the time I reach 10, my hands are no longer shaking when I lower them. But because I didn't expect Elliot to leave, I never heard him walk away. In the dark night, the reception on the outdoor porch is a beacon of tiny lights and stars thrown from candlelight traveling through glasses of champagne. Heat lamps placed at regular intervals are warm enough in the night air to make the humid air warp around the slow-dancing couples. I find George to the left of the dance floor near the wedding cake, which has already been cut and shared. His cheeks are red, smile wide, eyes watery with happy inebriation.
Mace!
He yells, pulling me into a lumbering hug.
Where's my brother?
I was going to ask you the same thing. He reaches up, pulling a small twig from my hair, and good God, it only occurs to me now that I have no idea what I look like coming out of the gardens after fucking Elliot. George grins.
I suspect you have a better idea than I do.
Liz comes up beside him, grinning at her tipsy husband. Macy, whoa, you look... Understanding comes into her eyes and she barks out a laugh. Where's Elliot?
The question of the hour,
George murmurs.
I'm right here.
We turn, finding him standing just to the side, holding a half-finished glass of champagne. The warm flush I felt on his cheek against my lips is gone. In its place is a pale stare, a slash of a frown. His tie is missing, shirt unbuttoned at the collar and smudged with both dirt and lipstick. Looking at him now, it is doubly obvious what we've been doing. I smile at him, trying to communicate with my eyes that there's more to discuss here, but he's not looking at me anymore. Tilting the flute to his lips, he downs the rest, places it on the tray of a passing waiter, and then says,
Macy, did you need me to drop you off at your motel?
Shock causes a cold wave to pass through me. George and Liz go quiet, and then shuffle away under a haze of secondhand mortification. My heart takes off, a snare drum leading into a cymbal crash, as I realize I'm being asked to leave. It's fine, I tell him. I can grab a lift. He nods.
Cool.
I take a step forward, reaching for him, and he stares at my hand on his arm with a frown, as if it's caked in mud. Can we talk tomorrow? I ask. His face twists, and he picks up another glass of champagne, downing this one in the time it takes for the waiter to offer me one and for me to decline. Elliot grabs another before the anxious waiter ducks away.
Sure, we can talk tomorrow,
he says, waving the glass.
We can talk about the weather, maybe our favorite type of pie, or, oh, we haven't yet talked about the merits of a crock pot versus a pressure cooker. We could do that.
I mean, finish what we've started, I whisper, realizing we've drawn the attention of a few family members. We weren't finished. Alex watches us at a distance with wide, worried eyes.
Weren't we? I thought we had the grand finale. You did what you're best at,
he says, smiling grimly.
You shut down.
You walked away, I retort. He laughs harshly, shaking his head and echoing in a murmur.
I walked away.
Softening, I say, tomorrow I'll come by. Elliot lifts the glass, swallowing 4 gulps and wiping his mouth with the back of his hand.
Sure thing, Macy.
At 1 in the morning, the sky feels haunted in its darkness. I climb the porch to my old summer home, skipping over the predictably broken step. Using the long-ignored key on my ring, I let myself inside, where it's even colder than it is in the woods. The insulation keeps the chill stored within the dark plaster walls. I turn on lights as I go and kneel to set a small fire in the wood-burning stove. Obviously, if I've only been here once in the past 10 years, I should remember the exact dates, but I don't. I only know it was a week, maybe two, before I left for my sophomore year at Tufts, and we drove up at night to sift through our possessions and move all the cherished things into closets we could lock to keep curious vacation renters from taking anything. The memory of that night feels like a blur of watery color streaking through fog. Upstairs, I sift through the other keys on my ring, finding the smaller one, and slide it into the lock on Dad's closet door. It enters in jagged steps, sticking halfway through, requiring a tiny wiggle before it clicks and turns with a rusty protest. His closet opens with a whiff of musty air, and my stomach drops when the scent and realization merge. I'll need to throw most of this out. He kept some shirts and pants up here, hiking boots, a fly-fishing vest. There are photo albums on the shelf up top, a nativity diorama I made in fourth grade, letters from Mom, and at the back, the stack of questionable magazines. My butt lands on the floor before I realize I've been sliding down the doorframe. Beneath the smell of mildew, there is the unmistakable smell of him, the Danish cigarettes, his aftershave, the bright linen scent of laundry. I pull a shirt from a hanger, messily. The wire flies up off the rod and hits the door on the way down. Pressing the flannel to my face, I inhale, choking through a sob. I haven't felt this way in so long, or maybe I never felt this particular emotion. I want to cry. I want to positively sob. I give it full access, letting it tear through me into these awful howls that echo off the high ceilings and shake my torso, curling me forward. Snot, spit, I am a mess. I feel him right there behind me, but I know he isn't. I want to call out to him, to ask him what's for breakfast. I want to hear the even cadence of his footsteps, the intermittent snap of the newspaper as he reads. All these instincts seem to live so close to the surface that they warp and weave through the fabric of possibility. Maybe he is downstairs reading. Maybe he is just getting out of the shower. It's these tiny reminders that hurt. The tiny moments where you think, let me just call out to him. Ah, right. He's dead. And you wonder how it happened. Did it hurt? Does he see me here in a sodden, sobbing puddle on his floor? This is the only thing that interrupts the torrent, pulling a thick laugh from my throat. If Dad ever found me crying like this inside his closet, he would stare down, befuddled, before slowly lowering himself to a crouch and reaching out, gently running his hand down my arm.
What is it, Mace?
I miss you, I tell him. I wasn't ready. I still needed you. He would get it now.
I miss you too. I needed you too.
Are you hurt? Are you lonely? I swipe an arm across my nose. Are you with Mom?
Macy.
I close my eyes, feeling more tears slide across my temples and into my hair. Does she remember me?
Macy.
Do either of you remember you had a daughter? I'm not myself. I know I'm not, but I'm not embarrassed to be found like this either, especially not by Dad. At least this way he'll see how loved he was. Strong arms come beneath my legs, around my back, and I'm lifted from the fog of mildew and Dad and carried down the hall. I'm sorry, I say again and again. I'm sorry I didn't call. I'm sorry, Dad, it's my fault. I'm still on his lap when he sits on my bed. He's so warm, so solid. I haven't been this small in years.
Mace, honey, look at me.
My vision is blurry, but it's easy to make out his features. Greenish gold eyes, black hair. Not Dad, Elliot. Still in his tux, eyes bloodshot behind his glasses.
There you are.
He says,
come back to me. Where did you go?
I slide my arms around his neck, jerking him closer, squeezing my eyes closed. I smell the grass on him, the bark of the olive tree. It's you.
It's me.
He needs my apology, too. I'm sorry, El. I ruined everything because I forgot to call.
I saw the lights on,
he whispers.
I came over and found you like this. Macy, Leah, tell me what's going on.
You needed me and I wasn't there. He goes quiet, kissing the top of my head.
Mace.
I needed you even more, I say, and begin sobbing again. But I couldn't figure out how to forgive you. Elliot pushes my hair out of my face, eyes searching.
Honey, you're scaring me. Talk to me.
I knew it wasn't your fault, I choke out, but for so long it felt like it was. I see the confused tears fill his eyes.
I don't understand what you...
He pulls me into his chest, one hand in my hair as his voice breaks.
Please tell me what's going on.
And so I do. Then, Monday, January 1st, 11 years ago. I woke to the sharp slam of the door, the pounding of footsteps along the entryway tiles.
Macy?
I groaned, cupping my stiff neck and sitting up just as Dad rounded the corner into the living room. A father's first assumption rippled through him, and he rushed to my side, crouching.
Did he hurt you?
His accent pushed the words together into a ball of anger. No, I winced, stretching, remembering. My stomach melted away. Actually, yes. Dad's hands made a careful trek over my shoulders and down my arms, taking my hands in his. He turned my palms over, inspecting them, and then pressed the pads of his thumbs to the center of my hands. I remember that touch like it was yesterday. We linked fingers. Realization pushed through the fog, and I registered that I was at the cabin, and Dad was here too, in the freezing cold morning more than 70 miles away from home. What are you doing here? He gave me a hard look with soft edges.
You never called to tell me you arrived here safely. You didn't answer your phone.
Slumping into him, I mumbled, I'm sorry, against his broad chest. I turned it off. He sighed a concerned sound.
What happened, mein Lille Blomst?
He made a mistake, I told him. A big one. Dad pulled back to meet my eyes.
Another girl.
I nodded. And a thick sob escaped at the memory of Elliot's body, bare, just lying there, sprawled. Dad let out a slow breath.
Didn't see that coming.
That makes two of us. He helped me up, curling a protective arm around my shoulders.
We'll come get the Volvo this weekend.
We'll come get the Volvo this weekend. I wonder what ever happened to it. Dad kept one giant hand on the steering wheel and the other curled around my fingers. He glanced at me every 5 seconds or so, no doubt wishing he had Mom's list right there on the dashboard to reference the first time a boy breaks her heart advice. I knew where to find it, number 32. His eyes were worried, brows drawn. As much as I hated what had happened with Elliot, I loved the warmth of Dad's attention on me, the reassuring contact of his hand, the quiet questions. What did I want for dinner? Did I want to go to a movie or stay home? But his attention on me meant it wasn't on the road. I'm not even sure he ever saw the car. It was a blue Corvette merging from the on-ramp and already going too fast. 60. Maybe even 70. It cut in front of us in the slow lane, screeching into the narrowing space between us and the 18-wheeler ahead. The Corvette's tires skittered, his back end jerked to the side, and his brake lights went a brilliant red, right there, right in front of us. Was there a point when it wasn't too late? This is what I always asked myself. Could I have communicated something more than a garbled dead and a pointed finger? Witnesses told police they thought the whole thing happened in fewer than 5 seconds, but it would forever happen in slow motion in my memory. I still feel Dad's worried eyes on me, not the Corvette. This was why he didn't even touch his brakes. We came on it so fast, with a deafening clash of metal, and our bodies jerked forward, airbags burst out, and I thought for a fraction of a second that it was okay. The impact was over. Except we hadn't landed yet. When we did, it was a bruising of the driver's side against asphalt, a screaming 20 feet of sparking metal. We came to a stop on our sides. My forehead ended up near the steering wheel. My seat had crushed Dad's, with him still in it. Later, I'd find out that the other driver was a student from Santa Rosa Junior College. His name was Kurt Anderson, and he walked away with a slight abrasion to his neck. Not from the seatbelt, he wasn't even wearing one, but from the fabric of the passenger seat where he was launched when his car spun sideways through 3 lanes of traffic. Kurt was unconscious at first, I think, and most of the activity focused on the far more gruesome reality of our car. I was already on the stretcher with a broken arm when Kurt emerged, stoned out of his mind and laughing at his survival until he was shocked into sobriety by the scene before him and the police with their handcuffs. I've heard people say that they don't remember what happened immediately after being told of the death of a loved one. But I remember everything. I remember acutely the way my broken arm hung like a sack of bones at my side. I remember the feeling of wanting to claw my skin off, of wanting to run, because running would somehow undo what the paramedics told me. Yes, he's gone. Sweetheart, I need you to calm down. I'm so sorry. We're going to take you down to Sutter, honey. You need a doctor. You need to breathe. I remember asking over and over for them to take it back, to do more CPR, to let me try to revive him. Wait!
Macy, I need you to try to breathe. Can you breathe for me?
Stop talking! I screamed. Everyone stop talking! I have an idea. We can start over. Let's get back in the car, go back to the house. I just need a second to think. We'll stay there tonight. Or no. Let's go back further. I won't forget to call in the first place. I want to go back to that other heartbreak, not this one. Today wasn't a good day to drive. If we drive today, I lose everyone. If we drive today, I won't be a daughter anymore. One of the police officers caught up to me easily when I clumsily rolled off the stretcher, sprinting down the freeway, away from the lights and the noise and the horrible mess of my father in the car. I can still feel the way the policeman wrapped his arms around me from behind, mindful of my broken arm, curling his body over me as I crumpled. I still remember him saying over and over that he was sorry. He was so sorry. He lost his brother the same way. He was so sorry. Afterward, there was the intrusive numbness. Uncle Kenneth came to Berkeley from Minnesota. He looked sour as we went over Dad's will and estate. He patted my back and cleared his throat a lot. Aunt Britt cleaned the house while I sat on the couch and stared at her. She got on her hands and knees, dunking a sponge into a bucket bubbling with wood soap, and scrubbed the hardwood floors for hours. It didn't feel like a loving gesture. It felt like she'd wanted to clean the house for years and finally had the chance. My cousins didn't come, not even for the funeral. "They have school," Britt said. "This will be too upsetting for them. They're staying with my parents in Edina." I remember wishing I could find the cop who chased me down and cried with me and bring him to the funeral, because he seemed to understand me better than anyone in my tiny remaining family did. But even that request felt impossible. The effort it took to eat and dress myself was already so intense. Remembering a name, calling the police station was beyond my ability. Or calling Elliot. I was numb, but beneath it was a blistering anger, too. Even at the time, I knew it wasn't quite right. I couldn't quite connect the dots, but the tiny kernel of hurt over Elliot with Emma got all wrapped up in Dad and why he came to get me in the first place. I needed Elliot, wanted him there. I saw the first few of his frantic texts, his insistence that it was a mistake. But then I vacillated between wanting him to know that I'd been shattered and wanting him to know that he'd been the one to lift the mallet. And then it felt better to think he wouldn't know. He could have every other bit of my heart, but not this. Like I said, I remember how it felt, and it felt like insanity. Kennett and Britt took me back with them to Minnesota for 4 months. I picked at my cuticles until they bled. I cut off my hair with kitchen shears. I woke up at noon and counted the minutes until I could go back to bed. I didn't argue when Kennett sent me to therapy, or when he and Britt sat at the dining room table, sifting through my college acceptance letters and weighing whether to send me to Tufts or Brown. I remember everything up to Britt's decisive tapping of the papers, her double take when she saw me standing at the foot of the stairs, and her satisfied, "We've got it all figured out, Macy." After that, there is nothing. I don't remember how they managed to secure my diploma. I don't remember sleeping my way through the summer. I don't remember packing for college. I have to believe the administration prepped Sabrina in some way, though she insists they didn't. For sure they handpicked her. She'd lost her brother in a car accident 2 summers before. I also have to believe that leaving Berkeley saved me. By December, I could go minutes without thinking about Dad, and then an hour, and then long enough to take an exam. My coping mechanism was to wrap my thoughts when they came into a scrap of paper, then discard them like a piece of gum. Sabrina would let the ache tear through her. I would curl up and sleep until I was sure the thought could be wrapped up tight. Time. I knew well enough that time numbed certain things, even death. Now, Monday, January 1st. Elliot sits back, eyes glassy, and stares out my bedroom window. I watch it all pass over him. The horror, the guilt, the confusion, the dawning realization that my dad died the day after Elliot cheated, that Dad was coming to get me because I'd been so upset and hadn't called, that the last day I saw my dad was 11 years ago today, and for many years I've blamed Elliot for it. His nostrils flare, and he blinks away, jaw tight.
Oh my God.
I know.
This explains.
Elliot shakes his head, digging a hand into the front of his hair.
Why you didn't call me back?
Quietly, I tell him. I wasn't thinking very clearly after. I wasn't able to separate you and it. I'm so bad at words.
Holy shit, Macy.
Catching himself, he turns and pulls me back into his arms, but it's different. Stiffer. I've had more than a decade to deal with this. Elliot has had 2 minutes. When you stopped me outside of Saul's, I say into his shirt and asked how Duncan was. He nods against me.
I had no idea.
I thought you knew, I told him. I thought you would have heard, somehow.
We didn't have anyone else in common,
he says quietly.
It was like you disappeared.
I nod, and he tightens. Something seems to occur to him.
All this time, you weren't out there thinking that I intentionally slept with Emma, knew your dad died and was fine with it, were you?
I try my best to explain the fogginess of my logic at the time. I don't think I really thought about it like that, that you were fine with it. I knew you were trying to call me. I knew rationally that you did love me. But I thought that maybe you and Emma had more of a thing going on than you ever told me. I was embarrassed and heartbroken.
We didn't have a thing,
he says urgently. I think it was Christian who said you two hooked up sometimes.
Macy,
Elliot says quietly, cupping my face so I'll look at him.
Christian is an idiot. You knew everything that happened with me and Emma. There wasn't some other...